When you die, what do you want on your gravestone? Perhaps it's a pot of flowers or your favorite cookie or something alluding to your murder or death by a demon. Be careful what you leave on your gravestone today on Cautionary Tales with Harper.
Cautionary tales, stories that are passed down or around. But are they always true? Do we really know their true meaning or intent? This is the podcast where we dive into cautionary tales, superstitions, mysteries, and more to discover the truth behind the tale. This is Cautionary Tales with Harper.
Welcome to the show. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button. It's me, Harper Brewski, and my dad, Tony Brewski. Dad, what do you want on your gravestone when you die?
That's always a fun question to be asked by your daughter. I hope you're asking this way earlier than you need to be, but what I think would be neat is if you could press a button and I would tell a ghost story. I think, you know, you could just have like a giant data bank of all the shows, you know, and then every time somebody goes up there and they press the button on the gravestone, boom, there I am telling them a story. Even better, a hologram of me appears.
Oh, God.
And there I am telling a ghost story. Now, maybe that's a little bit too much for a graveyard. That probably would be. But, you know, if we're just talking about inscription, I don't know. I've never really thought of that. Never thought about, you know, what I would want on. And I'd have to really give that some serious thought to give you an accurate answer. But I think something about the ghost show, I've always, that's been outside of, you know, my family, you know, my work passion and my, you know, interest passion, other than, you know, making sure, you know, you guys grow up to be happy, healthy individuals with a love of ghost stories.
What about a mixtape from one of those episodes that you did as a kid?
A mixtape from an episode like when I was playing radio station?
Yeah.
I'd rather have something better to listen to because people aren't going to know me, you know. I'd rather have, you know, the better years. The years where the show's doing, you know, like these years. You know, tapes of this. Or how about this? You press a button and it's this conversation. It's Dad. What do you want in your gravestone when you're dead? And it just plays this. What we're doing right now back. And it's like, I don't know. That would be the irony of it. Like you press the button and there I am talking about, I don't know what I want on my gravestone when I'm dead and I'm dead and there's the gravestone, but you're listening to me discuss it. So maybe that's what we do. I don't know.
Oh God.
That would be kind of funny. How about yourself? Do you have any ideas? Have you pondered this thought yourself?
I always thought this house, like if shrink rays were exist in 2020, I would want a miniature version of this house on my gravestone.
Like a little, like a, not a sculpture, but kind of like a sculpture, but like, so a mini looking of this house, you know, like a picture of the house on the gravestone, or you want the gravestone to look like a mini version of the house?
Mini version of the house.
That's kind of interesting. Why is that?
Because I love this house.
So this is just, it's home to you, and you want that to... It's an interesting thought. You know, we'll talk in this episode a little bit about gravestones. We're talking about some interesting messages on gravestones that have been left over the years. But we'll also talk about shapes of gravestones and what the meaning is behind some of the shapes of gravestones. Because people, you know, they see them and you go, why? Why does this gravestone look like a tree stump? Why does this one look to have a finger pointing up? The imagery, the symbolism on gravestones. There's a lot of meaning behind that. And a lot of times in these days, it's not done as often as it was many, many years ago.
What's the cautionary tale in this?
Well, the cautionary tale is just be careful what you put on your gravestone. So the cautionary tale for me is I should be more determinant on what I want on my gravestone. Otherwise, others can decide for you, and you may not want others to decide for you what goes on your gravestone.
It's my gravestone, people.
But if you've never dictated what you want on your gravestone, your kids may end up saying, you know, mom was a this or that or something on your gravestone. So you want to make sure that, I guess, you have that lined up a little bit. So that's going to be the cautionary part of today's episode is make sure you got that noted somewhere, because some of these messages and some of the things that we are going to find out.
Ooh, I finally found out what I actually want on my gravestone.
What's that?
CDs of all the horror movies in the world.
You mean like DVDs of... And that would be a blinding gravestone when the sunlight hits it.
Oh, well.
Oh, well. That would be interesting.
The gravestone will be right next to mine.
Well, there's a lot of interesting gravestones out there and a lot of interesting things written on them. And we can jump into that. And we'll also then, like I said, jump into some of the symbolism of gravestones. So if you have a specific shape like you want, like Harper wants a replica of our house to be carved into granite and made into a grave, there you go. You might want to be specific on that too. But how about a gravestone that just simply reads specimens?
What do you mean by specimen?
You know what a specimen is?
Nope.
Specimen is something typically used like in the scientific community, where it's someone that has either, at this day and age, it would be have donated your body to science or something, or parts or things like that, so people can learn, and doctors and medical people can learn, you know, what needs, you know, how to do things, essentially. It advances science and medicine for the living. But quite often, that's done with the dead. So doctors can learn and different things can be tested. But that's today, all that's very regulated and under control. But back in the day, 100 years ago, maybe not even that in some cases, the need for bodies in science was very great. And sometimes it wasn't very easy to get them. And there was actually a whole industry out there where people would steal bodies from graveyards and then go and sell them to medical facilities and things of that nature so they could use them for learning how to do surgery and learning about the inside of the human body. Because there wasn't, you know, there was no x-rays and things of that back then. It was you cut the person open. And if you're going to do heart surgery on somebody, you better have some experience working on a heart, even if it is a dead person's heart, so you know where things are and how things go. So specimen would be an unidentified part or pieces, or even in some cases, a whole body that doesn't necessarily have an identity to it, or they're unaware of the identity of who it was. Obviously, the person had an identity at some point in time, but at the time of their burial, they wouldn't know what it was. There's a gravestone in the Ohio Asylum System in what was called the Insane Cemetery. They're numerous, and two stand out as a little more disturbing than the rest. Rather than containing the name, even the date, or simply anything about the person, it just simply says specimens. The bodies of people that were experimented on are used with untested medication, body parts. There's a lot of theories that exist as to what this would be, but no one really is completely certain. But that would just be a creepy one to walk up upon and see the word specimens.
What if I don't want my body donated to science?
You don't have to have it donated to science, but some people do, and some people look at it as a good thing, as you know, I can help future generations. You could help your kids, you could help your grandkids, you could help other people just as a whole by having your body donated, because those are ways that people can learn. It's not like they're going to just, you know, prop you up in a museum or something and say, hey, look, there's Harper or something like that. It would be used for good purpose of teaching and advancing technology in medicine to ways that we probably can't even fathom today. So that's how we have the medicine we have today. That's how we have the surgical procedures that we have today. It's because people over time, over the last several hundred years, did say, when I die, I'd like my body to be donated so that others can live longer and better lives, and the future generations, it can be a positive thing for them. As great and wonderful as that is, I myself don't want to be donated to science either. I don't want to be cremated either. I want to be buried. That's just what I want. And everyone is totally entitled to do whatever they want with their bodies. It's a personal thing and not something that anyone should be judging another on. But that's the answer as to why people have done it. Here's another gravestone for you. Baby monster is what this gravestone said.
Why?
Born October 23rd, 1888, died February 3rd, 1889. So this individual lived shortly more than about, 4 or 5 months. And there is a lot of theories on this one as to what's going on with it. Was the last name Monster? Because sometimes when babies were born and a mortality rate... Mortality rate means how long someone lives or chances of survival after birth was lower before modern medicine. It was lower. People died giving birth quite frequently. People died after being born quite frequently because there wasn't the medicine and things available if there was something wrong. And people were also quite a hell of a lot more blunt with how they felt about things. And it really, I don't think necessarily, maybe I'm wording that wrong. They were uninformed. They were uninformed. They were not educated. It didn't exist. They didn't know, I think in many cases on what, how to describe something. If somebody comes out, when they're born, there's certainly people with deformities and things of that nature. It's quite a harsh, horrible thing to refer to it as a baby monster. But again, when we look at this gravestone here from 1888, there's one of two ways of looking at it. And we don't know the reality of it, but last name could be Monster or Monster, or it could have been a very harsh way that somebody labeled this child that had some sort of deformity that one would look at who is very ill-informed or just of the time and would say, oh, that looks like a monster, which is a horrible thing to say or do. But we're talking more than 100 years ago, and people had very different understandings of the world that we live in and of biology and genetics and all of that.
Okay. I want to ask, yeah. Are you like seeing pictures of the gravestone?
I am.
Okay, because I kind of want to see them.
I'll put them up on this screen so you can see them as well. There's nothing too exciting. They're just gravestones. See, this is Baby Monster gravestone right there.
Okay, because I just want to see what you're seeing.
Yep, that's what I'm seeing. Here's one where it goes into a curse. Mary C. DeLawrence, as you might guess, felt no love for her neighbors as we go into this. However, she took her animosity to a whole new level, entertaining paranoid delusions that all of her neighbors conspired against her and wished her harm. She was a loner. She was also known as the local cat lady, and she left almost everything to the Massachusetts Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals when she died in 1985, which there's nothing wrong with that. That's a good thing to do, but she was probably suffering from something that she never got help for if she was thinking that all of her neighbors were out to get her. There's bad people out there, but it's usually not your whole neighborhood trying to get you. During her life, neighbors say she would pick feuds and shine lights at different people. And since her death, However, most townspeople say the curse has had little to no impact on the community. But her tombstone has this ominous warning on it. And she doesn't even have her name on the tombstone, but it says, "May eternal damnation be upon those in Whaling Port who, without knowing me, have maliciously vilified me. May the curse of God be upon them and theirs." So quite a warning, and some view that as a curse. People in the area who lived in this neighborhood with her say the curse seems to not really have any effect.
Well, if it's just a saying on a tombstone, it really doesn't do anything.
It's more than a saying. I mean, it's a pretty dark thing to say to someone. I mean, to leave the earth like wishing death and damnation on those around you that are just like your... It's one thing if you're going to wish that upon like the Nazis or something horrible, some group of horrible people. But it's one thing just to wish it upon your neighbors. That's like, it's a little much. It's a bit much. When you also in death were kind of a philanthropist by giving all your money to a good organization. So it's like, it's kind of funny because one angle of it's like, oh, this is really nice. She donated her money to help animals. And on the other end of it, she's damning the neighborhood to hell. So it's like that's a bit much.
Why am I laughing at this? I'm an 8-year-old.
You've always laughed at horrible things. So
of course I do.
I mean, a true story. When you were in your stroller, if me and Mom were joking about something that was kind of, you know, a dark joke or something that mainly adults would get, you would just start cracking up. And it's like, how? How does this little person holding this cuddly little unicorn puppet with barely any hair find this so amusing? And her eyes are just lit up like, oh, that was a good one, Dad. It's like she can't even speak words yet. She's getting these jokes. So here's another one. Robert Clay Allison, he never killed a man that did not need killing.
Okay.
So, I mean, it pretty much implies he killed some people in his lifetime. But they had it coming, is what it sounds like. 1840 to 1887. Clay Allison died in 1887, but not before killing a whole lot of other people first. He fought in the Civil War, and afterwards became a rancher and a gunfighter. He fought pretty much anyone that he challenged, including those who served the law, and considered himself not above breaking into a jail in order to enact vigilante justice on prisoners. Rather than dying in a gunfight, however, a wagon rolled over his body and broke his neck, killing him when he was 46 years old.
Well, kind of deserved it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it all depends how you look at what he was doing. I mean, obviously, you can't be doing that sort of thing today. And he had a justification in his mind for what was going on.
It's like, what are you gonna do now? Please, gonna put my tombstone in the
in the jail?
Yeah,
like arrest the tombstone? Yeah. Here's an interesting one from a husband and wife, Herman Harband. My wife, Eleanor, Arthur of Queens, New York, lived like a princess for 20 years, traveling the world with the best of everything. When I went blind, she tried to poison me, took all my money, all my medication, and left me in the dark, alone and sick. It's a miracle I escaped. I won't see her in heaven because she's surely going to hell.
Oh, That's dark, but also pretty funny.
Oddly enough, the headstone was made ahead of time. Herman is not buried here. He ordered the headstone for himself after he divorced his wife. And you see plainly his state of mind that he was in by what he said about his wife. So he was like, I'm going to have this forever put on onto this gravestone. He honestly believed that she wanted to kill him. However, he later remarried happily, passed away before being buried in 2011 in Raleigh, North Carolina. His old headstone remains, though, in Florida. And the plot that he planned to be buried in has since been resold. So there is no death date on this stone. It's just 1918 of the date that he was born. But he never ended up actually using that stone in real life.
First of all, if you're gonna get a gravestone, first of all, tell like your friend that you want like the saying on your gravestone and then have them order it.
Mm-hmm.
And have them order it, like, if they're, like, someone that can predict the future, have them, like, write the...
So you're saying get a psychic involved in your grave making.
Exactly.
And then that'll help you, you know what to put on the grave or how to handle it.
Yep.
Here's one that is, it's, I guess, the cautionary tale here is, be good to your children. Because at the end, if they're the ones that are in charge, and in many cases, that's how it works out, of your grave, you probably, you know, want to make sure that they don't take out their feelings on you in eternity, on your grave, stone. This is, it says, to our mother, Mona Harold, Vonnie, October 14th, 1912, April 11th, 1996. You spent your life expressing animosity for nearly every person you encountered, including your children. Within hours of his death, you even managed to declare your husband of 57 years unsuited to being either a spouse or a father. Hopefully, you are now insulated from all the dissatisfaction you found in human relationships. Buddy, Jackie, and Mike.
Okay. Be nice to your kids, people.
And, you know, honestly, I don't blame the kids for making a... If that's the life that you had and that was, you know, the mother that you had, you know, throughout your life and it was left there, you know, there's something to be said for finding peace. And that is a good thing. And I'm a big proponent of that. But if it's left that way and even within hours of her husband dying or saying those horrible things, you know, the kids, you know, I guess everyone grieves in different ways, but that would be how they did it. And that's the marker on that gravestone.
I would probably do the same thing if you and Mom gave me a horrible life, then I would probably express my anger.
On a gravestone.
Exactly.
But
and on your gravestone.
I'm hoping you won't.
Oh, you were giving me the best life ever, so all I'm gonna write is happy things.
Okay, that'll be good. Here's one. This one is this gravestone, Lily E. Gray. It's very basic. June 6, 1881 to November 14th, 1958. Victim of the Beast, 666.
Don't call that number, kids.
The gravestone sits in Salt Lake City Cemetery, and little is actually known about what happened here. While her obituary said she died of natural causes, her gravestone marks her as a victim of the beast. It might hint at the fact that her husband, who she married at 72, was imprisoned in the past for criminal activity. And a nearby area also saw a great deal of Aleister Crowley's followers. So perhaps him and his minions played into Gray's death. And what we're talking about there are Satanists and people that may have had something to do with her death. I don't know if that is the case, but kind of an ominous gravestone to come across when you're walking through the cemetery.
Ominous yet hysterical.
Yes, ominous yet hysterical. How about one that deals with rabies and suffocation?
Great.
That would be a great one to put out there for everyone. In memory of Mary Jane McCune, wife of James W. Farrer, born about 1838, died 1855. Bitten by rabid coyote, developed rabies, became violent, was smothered with feather bed. When husband returned, she and her unborn child were dead and buried. Sad story.
But yet hysterical.
Well, it's... rabies is a disease that if you get it today, if you go get your shot, quickly enough, if you're a human and you get rabies, it is curable. There's an antidote for it. If you don't, it's a horrible, painful death that kind of can put you out of your mind and almost make you act like a zombie. Not that you're necessarily out there trying to eat other people or get their brain or anything, but rabid animals also will attack people because it's enacting almost this rage portion in your brain, and in people too. So what likely happened in this situation is exactly what happened. They came home, somehow this person had contracted rabies. They didn't know how to cure them, probably felt threatened, and then they had to smother and kill her because she was in that state. It's horrible to think of, but again, we're talking 1855 too. So medicine, the state of the people, state of society, the state of modern anything, in understanding of these things, very different than it is today. Let's talk now about some of the shapes that we see of gravestones and what exactly they mean. One of them you see quite often, and I'll try and cover some of the more common ones that are seen, and we go, what is this all about? You'll see the urn. It looks like a flower pot, and it has a drape over it. The draped urn is what it is. After the cross, the urn is one of the most commonly used cemetery monuments. The design represents a funeral urn and is thought to symbolize immortality. Cremation was a very early form of preparing the dead for burial. In some periods, especially classical times, it's a more common form of burial. The shape of the container in which the ashes were placed may have taken the form of a simple box or marble vase, but no matter what it looked like, it was called an urn. Burial became more commonplace. The urn continued to be closely associated with death. The urn is commonly believed to testify to the death of the body and the dust into which the body will change. Well, the spirit of the departed go on. The cloth draping there and symbolically guards the ashes. The shroud draped urn is believed by some to mean that the soul has departed and the shrouded body for its trip to heaven. Others say that the drape signifies the last preparation between life and death. So when you see that, whoever had that, that was the reasoning. Sometimes you'll see a finger pointed on a gravestone. These are quite often on very old stones.
Pointing up.
Yeah, and so that one's representing that they're going up to heaven is what the thought process is there. And what I'm curious about it is, was the thought process that even if the person was kind of a bad person in life and they had some question about are they going to heaven or hell? Well, if we put the up on the gravestone or the finger pointing up, maybe that will be the direction point and then they'll get the direction and that will fix all of the above. I don't know.
Is heaven actually in the clouds?
Well, no, it's not in the clouds. It would be.
Well, then why is it up?
Well, because it's always referred to as up. It's just classically, up is heaven, down is hell. I mean, if you see a finger pointing down on a gravestone, I think that would be a little more ominous.
Is there any pictures of that? Please tell me there is, because I would like to see that.
I don't think I've come across any yet. One of them that I've always wondered about, and I always thought was very interesting, and I see this a lot in the cemetery where I used to go as a kid and wander around, was these gravestones that look like tree trunks. And they look like a tree. Like, see, look at this. It looks like a tree that's almost draped in concrete or something. This was a common practice many years ago. I suppose some still may use it. The tombstone in the shape of a tree trunk is symbolic for the brevity of life. A number of broken branches appearing on a tree trunk may also indicate deceased family members buried at this site, as it's an interesting example in this Allegheny Cemetery in Pittsburgh that we're looking at this this picture of, where they've put literally names on, it looks like, branches that are carved off the side of the tree. So could also be a way of saving money on your grave plot, too. You don't need multiple gravestones. It's just who wants the third trunk to the left, or the third branch to the left? And then everybody's got the same one, and you're all just kind of buried around this tree thing. Yeah, might be kind of fun.
I don't think I want a tree. I think I want a horse, like, bucking up.
So you want a horse bucking up now? A horse bucking up on top of the house that you're wanting created for
you?
Yes. Or
yes.
Or how exactly do you want that that to be?
A horse bucking up on top of the house. It's so exotic.
One more before we wrap up today's episode of Cautionary Tales. Here's a man who befell a terrible medical tragedy, and he had it put on his grave for all to know. And it could also be looked at here as almost the ultimate revenge on someone who kind of wrongs you and ends up in your own death. It's, I guess, a way to kind of one more screw you from the grave. It says, right. In memory of Charles H. Salmon, who was born Friday, September 10th, 1858, he grew, waxed strong, and developed into a noble son and a loving brother. He came to his death the 12th of October, 1884, by the hands of a careless drug clerk and two excited doctors at 12 o'clock at night in Kansas City. So basically, it says, you know, he was killed in modern times. We would say it's a prescription drug overdose or a prescription drug, reaction that didn't work. So a careless drug clerk would be the person who said, take this medicine, it'll help you. And some doctors that were very excited at the idea. Now, to go into the world of, was this negligent or were they truly thinking that they could help this person? We don't know that whole story. But if you're the family of the individual who is someone who has died because of something of that sort, I mean, that's where, you know, there are lawsuits and court cases and things like that where you can prove that somebody was negligent in something. But there are also quite often cases where things just don't work the way that they're supposed to. And the body, you know, everybody's body is different, and some bodies take certain prescription medications well, some don't. And you can't always predict that, but sometimes it's given. You would hope, and I would say in most cases, from a reputable doctor to try and help, not hurt. But if you're the brother, the sister, the wife, or the husband of someone who died that way, I can understand that anger that they would have there and be putting that onto a gravestone. At some point, you may look back at that and go, maybe that was a bit harsh. But, you know, at the time where it's like, what do you want in the grave? Here's what I want in the grave. And then that's what you end up getting.
That wraps up today's episode. Be sure to press that subscribe button wherever you download podcasts. And leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And remember, if you don't ask the right questions, you may end up being part of Cautionary Tale. For Cautionary Tales with Harper, I'm Harper Bruski.